welcome to New Books in Art. I am your host, Lorena Turner. I am a photographer and a lecturer in the communication department at California State Polytechnic University in Pomona, California. Today, I'll be talking with John Brian King. John is a photographer and a graphic designer. We'll be talking about his book, Nude Reagan, which was released on June 1st of 2016. In 2015, John's first book of photography came out called LAX, Photographs of Los Angeles from 1980 to 1984. You may have seen John's work as well if you saw the movie Punch Drunk Love or if you saw Boogie Nights. He designed the title sequences for both of those movies along with other films. So let's talk with John. I'm talking today with author John Brian King about his new photography book, Nude Reagan. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi, Lorena.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
I was born in L.A., raised in L.A., over in an area called Westchester, right by the airport. And I went to California Institute of the Arts for photography. Loved it there. It was when it was still like drugs and hippies and punks. I went to a lot of punk shows. And then I started a bookstore and mail order catalog called Amok Dispatch and Amok Bookstore. And I did that for about 9 years. And that got a lot of press. We carried like books that were, we called the extremes of information in print, extreme right wing, extreme left wing, surrealism, how to kill books, all sorts of things like that. And then when that went south, in terms of the recession and money and stuff, I became a title designer for films. And I worked on films like Boogie Nights and The Ring and Punch Drunk Love. And I did that for about 10 years, and I really enjoyed that. In the meantime, I did a book called Lust Mord, The Writings and Artifacts of Murderers, which is a compilation of murderers' writings and photographs and artworks. And that did really well, and I had a lot of fun with that. And at some point, I started writing. I wrote screenplays, and I got hired for a horrible TV show called Cold Case. And I, during that entire time, I gave up photography. But then after I was done with Cold Case, I decided to make my own film called Redlands as feature film about a photographer and his model. And that sparked interest in me doing photography again. And that's when I went through my files and I found all my old photographs that I took when I was essentially in high school in CalArts. That photographs I took at Los Angeles Airport. And I put out a book last year called LAX, Photographs of Los Angeles, 1980-1984. And since then, I've been photographing quite a bit. And I photographed this book, Nude Reagan, which is coming out Wednesday.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So is Nude Reagan, the images, the photographs in Nude Reagan, those are contemporary photos, so not from your archives, correct?
Not from my archives. I photographed 23 nude models in an empty office space in Palm Springs, where I live now. And I used this cheap Fujifilm Instax camera. And I just sort of just let them go crazy, these models. Like, I photographed them, and they kind of felt kind of free with this mask. Like, they did a bunch of hilarious poses and some really crazy poses, and I loved it.
And did you, when you originally, how did you find the people that you photographed?
Well, when I did research on my film Redlands, there's this website called Model Mayhem, which is sort of this underground alternative model website where people are vetted in a pretty good way. So it isn't like Craigslist where you just get all the crazies, but where you can hook up with these models and set up times to photograph them and pay them. And I was able to get models from the Palm Springs area as far out as Riverside or Temecula, but I also got a few models from LA. And I got them out here to photograph them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And were they comfortable with what you asked them to do?
they're very comfortable. I didn't ask them to do anything that was really extreme. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these models are used to like posing nude in an abandoned house, wearing a gas mask in the desert and, you know, lots of really unpleasant stuff in terms of personal comfort and stuff. Also, you know, I'm older. I'm not some, you know, guy who does not operate a camera, is obviously trying to hook up with girls or whatever. You know, there's probably a bunch of skeeves on the Model Mayhem site. But, you know, I have a degree in photography. You know, a lot of the models said they never worked with a photographer, actually had a degree in photography, you know.
Wow.
So, and I had very set notions in mind what I was going to do in terms of photographing them. It wasn't like sit on this bed and think about, you know, love or whatever horseshit these photographers usually do.
Mm-hmm. And did you get the sense that they felt, I think you alluded to this, but did you get the sense that there was kind of a liberation that they felt in wearing the mask?
Yes, very much so. I mean, I guess if there was anything I was worried about is that they would be offended wearing a mask because it covers up their face. But it was the opposite. They were kind of just freed by the mask and were able to pose anyway. I did this movie, this little short film called Model Test, where I posed them topless in front of the video camera with their hands above their head, like they're, you know, being arrested or something. But it's also like a typical show your boobs kind of shot that these tacky photographers do. And I wanted to make it almost look like a Guantanamo video or something, you know, like kind of just have nude photography as torture kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I did that first. And then after that, I loosened them up by taking these Reagan photographs, and they loved it.
Oh, interesting. I'd always wondered if I had a feeling that those, the two events that the, say, Model Test represents and then the images from the book, that they were, obviously they're connected, but I wasn't sure if they were done at different time periods, if like there was a, you know, a kind of a depth to the relationship you created with each one and asked them to come back. But it sounds like this was like, it was happening within one setting or one meeting.
Yeah, I'm not interested in, like, there's a really great photographer and furniture designer named Carlo Molino, and he essentially had his Milan, Italy house set up with a little studio where he would hire prostitutes throughout, I don't know, 20 years, 10, 20 years, to just come to his house late at night, and he would photograph them. I didn't want that. I wanted to do kind of a blitzkrieg kind of approach of, like, having each model for an hour or two and photographing them and then just moving on to, you know, and I did it for about 2 months photographing all these models. I rented the office space for 2 months, and in that 2 month period, I photographed 23 models. I paid them, you know, and then I moved on. I didn't want to have like relationships with these people necessarily.
Right. How do you think the office space, how do you think that, kind of maybe impacted their perception of you or the perception of what you were doing or their behavior?
Well, I mean, I know that with talking with them, I know that they had situations where they were asked to photograph in the photographer's bedroom or in his garage and how creepy that was. And when I auditioned for Redlands, I auditioned in a little small theater in Atwater Village. I didn't want people to feel like they needed to come to my house and audition, because I thought that was just kind of like unprofessional. So I wanted to have definitely some kind of a studio for the series where they felt that they were in kind of a neutral space. And I love the look of an office space because it's kind of just horrible, but bland and ugly. And mm-hmm. I thought it was a perfect backdrop for the photographs that I took there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I know I have, when I look at the pictures, they have, I mean, it's hard to know exactly what the pictures in the book, it's hard to know exactly what the location is, but now that I know that, I kind of bring that to how I look at the pictures, and it gives, you know, to me, it gives their behavior and, their kind of interaction with the camera. It gives it kind of a different feeling.
Well, it was also kind of unlike some other things I've done in terms of photography. It was a real collaboration in the sense that with a Polaroid camera, they were able to see the photographs while I took the pictures. Mm-hmm. So they were able, I was able to say, okay, this one's really dark. This is kind of cool. Let's try to do this. And you know, they were involved and they enjoyed that. Just also, you know, most of the models were young and they had never seen an instant camera before. So they were kind of fascinated by the technology of it.
Was the choice of using the instant camera kind of built into your conception of the project?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Because especially this camera, because there's other kinds of Polaroid cameras and Fujifilm cameras out there. But I love this camera because the print is the size of a business card. It's very small. And the wonderful thing about this camera to me in terms of the series is you can't control the exposure unless you just had all the lights off. And I photographed these ladies mostly during the day, like around noon. And I had this light coming in from the outside and Palm Springs light. It's always bright. And you can't turn off the flash of this camera. So you can cover a piece of black electrical tape or whatever. But I decided to just let the craziness of the exposure kind of like just be random. And I kind of enjoyed that it just didn't really make sense sometimes what the exposure would be. Like it would be perfectly beautiful, bright day, and it would be the darkest photographs in the series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of, definitely a lot of variation. I mean, there's some images where you can barely see the figure. The person, you can just kind of make out the silhouette, and they're kind of very much hidden in the picture. You have to really kind of search for the to find the entire edge around the person. And sometimes I'm looking at one image where I really can't see, say, the bottom right part of her body. It's just completely absent.
And it gives it kind of a ghostly quality. Even when they're overexposed and really bright, it gives it this kind of quality that I really like of them as like wraiths, like demons.
Mm. And do you think, did you take a certain number? I know in collaborations of this nature, you know, you don't have a set kind of fixed number of photos that you're going to take of each person, but more or less, did you kind of get what you want and say four images or five images, or was it fewer or greater than that?
I would usually, it comes in a box of 10, the film, and I would usually shoot a box for each model. So I shot 230 photographs approximately. Mm-hmm. And then I got it down to 107 photos for the final. Some of them were just black, like I couldn't use them. Mm-hmm. And then some of them they repeated a pose that I'd seen before. I really took pains not to direct them. So I wouldn't say like, you know, oh, don't do that. It's already been done. I would let them do whatever. And then I just knew I was going to edit later. Mm-hmm. The real nightmare of this project was not the photography part. The photography part was wonderful. It was easy and fun. But then I had to scan them and I had to remove all the dust and dirt and all that stuff.
From the surface of each picture?
Yes. Polaroids they get so dirty so quick.
Huh, and I didn't know that.
Kind of a nightmare to go through each one and clean it up in a way. I mean, I left something obvious, like you'll see in some of the photographs, there's scratches and, just exposure variations, obviously. But I didn't want it to be just one big dust fest, so I got rid of the dust for each one.
Right. I'm looking to see, I'm checking to see if I notice any, and I just don't yet. I think I have to spend a little bit more time. I mean, they're definitely kind of aberrations in the emulsion that are interesting, where there's like, it's not a part of the exposure, but where there's like an area that looks a little bit lighter than the rest, you know, which I recognized from using Polaroids that they're amazing. I'm just amazing little images that really kind of take on a life of their own. You know,
yeah.
you're completely, as you've just described, completely have no control over the way the finished product, which is, I think, what's so attractive about them.
I left that stuff in. I love that stuff, but I just didn't want like some of them were just had white dots galore, especially the worst ones to dust bust were the really dark images because they just had white dots everywhere.
Right, of course.
So I just had to clean that up. And then also, you know, it was the first time I scanned Polaroids, so there's these things called Newton rings that happen. When you press it right against the glass, it causes this rainbow kind of like fingerprints all over the print.
Sure.
So you have to kind of raise it up above the glass somehow.
Oh, that's how – I didn't know that that's how you get rid of it.
Yeah, you just don't have it contacting the glass.
Right.
So I rigged some kind of like a frame essentially to put the photographs in the scanner so that they wouldn't touch the glass.
Is the scanner able to focus on a surface that's slightly above the glass itself?
Yes. The scanner is built that way for negatives and stuff anyway, so it's not a big deal.
I see. So easy for that to do. So yeah. So you narrow down the 230 pictures to 107.
Yes.
And then you had the task of the kind of incredible challenge of figuring out what image is going to be first, what's going to bring people into this, what's going to, you know, and then how are the images going to progress through the book, and then where, how are you going to end it?
Yes.
So how describe that for us a little bit. How did you choose the first image?
Well, one of the things that was nice about this is that after I scanned them and picked all the images I wanted to have in the book, I was able to actually take the Polaroids themselves and lay them out and kind of figure out the order I wanted to be in. Usually when you do a photography book that's done digitally, you have to print out the photographs and all that stuff, right? But mm-hmm. I actually had these little business card side Polaroids that I could just sort of figure out where I wanted it to be. And I don't know, I've been editing for a while and I've done design, from my film design and other design. So it was actually easy and a lot of fun where I wanted it to start with the picture of the model. The model's the same model that's on the cover for the first image. And it kind of is an even exposure. It isn't too dark or too light. And it has that sickly green that is kind of a theme throughout the book. And she's looking like almost straight at the viewer, and there isn't full nudity. It's kind of covered, and I kind of like that to bring the viewer in. And then when I picked images throughout, I really it just was by instinct. It wasn't by any kind of thing. Like the only thing I had to make sure of is the two of the same models couldn't be near each other, because I wanted the body types to be like different, like throughout the entire book. So, and then just, I tried not to have it so there'd be two images on the opposite pages that were just completely dark, because I thought that was, there's a couple times I did that just because I thought it was nice, but I tried to avoid that too.
And I think, and let's see what's, I have to turn back and see what the last image is. It's a very dark image.
It's the darkest image. Yeah. Right. It's an image that I wasn't even sure I could have in the book, and I had to talk to my printer in Italy about making sure that he could handle it, and he did.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, it's incredibly subtle.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally just like a tiny bit of light coming in from the sun outside.
So a little bit later, I'd like to talk a little about your experience printing the book, because you do have these kind of various tones, and you weren't in Italy kind of monitoring the press. So I want to talk a little bit about your experience with that, but I want to talk, right now about the choice of using the Reagan mask. If you could tell us why Reagan and why now?
Well, Reagan to me represents like the downfall of America, and before that, the downfall of California. When I was a kid, California governor was Ronald Reagan. And that's like, when I did my book on Lustmord, Murder's Writings, there was a point where Santa Cruz was the murder capital of the world. And it turned out because there were like two serial killers running rampant in Santa Cruz at the time. They were both people that should have been incarcerated or been in mental facilities. But Ronald Reagan cut all this funding in the late 60s for mentally ill people. And Ronald Reagan's like when all of a sudden there were crazy homeless people on the street and the serial killings that I just discussed. And he, to my mind, is possibly the evilest person in my lifetime. And so he's always been this kind of demon. And I don't know if you've seen the film The Killers. It's a film by Don Siegel. It's based on a Hemingway story with Lee Marvin and Clu Gulager play these hitmen. And Ronald Reagan, it's his last film, and he plays a bad guy, and he's great in it because he's just so evil in it, the way he looks. And he's sort of like the last gasp of all these old farts who are racist and homophobic and just horrible people. And, you know, I lived in Silver Lake during the AIDS crisis, and he did jack for that. And it's interesting that Hillary Clinton recently defended Nancy Reagan because, you know, Ronald Reagan essentially killed like thousands of people with the AIDS crisis, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I was in CalArts when Reagan got elected, and everyone just knew that the arts were going to be dead. The NEA was going to get like defanged, and sure enough. And then there was the Meese Commission report that talked about pornography and how evil everything was. And I just realized that he was a good guy to bring up again, because now you got people like Obama who are saying, oh, Ronald Reagan was actually pretty good. He, you know, stopped the Cold War and all that stuff. And it's like, oh, come on. He's really just the worst. So then there's also representations of Ronald Reagan in films and TV, and like where people use the masks, like in Point Break. That
right,
you know, they use Ronald Reagan. I think they use president's masks, but Ronald Reagan's definitely one of the masks. And in 30 Rock, the sitcom, the Alec Baldwin character is having like Skype sex with his wife, where she puts on a Ronald Reagan mask and making fun of the whole Ronald Reagan fetish. Mm-hmm. And one of the greatest stories I read a while ago is by J.G. Ballard in a book called The Atrocity Exhibition. Mm-hmm. He wrote a short story called Why I Want to Fuck Ronald Reagan. Mm-hmm. And it's like this kind of like cut up forensic psychiatric report on like the sexuality of Ronald Reagan. And, you know, where they put like Ronald Reagan's head on women and have sex with the women, and the orgasm rate's like 3% and stuff. It's just like hilarious.
Wow.
And at the time that when that story came out in 1970, it was ruled obscene. The American edition was destroyed because of that one story. And Ronald Reagan wasn't even president then. He was governor, but he wasn't president. So when the story came out, so that was a big influence too. That story. I love that story.
Wow. Wow, I didn't know about that story.
It's like only 3 pages long, but it's just like really disturbing.
Huh, that's we'll have to find that and read that.
Yeah, it's when it's at a time when J.G. Ballard was writing about like you know, fantasizing about crashing a car into Elizabeth Taylor. He was fascinated with the idea of celebrity. Mm-hmm. And the assassination of John F. Kennedy as a downhill race and some crazy stuff like that. So
wow. Did the models, I'm assuming they knew who Reagan was.
No,
they
most
didn't.
Of them not. And then the ones who, that's one of the things I did do is I asked each one of them what they thought the mask was. And the ones who thought they knew, they all said Nixon.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? That's so funny.
Yeah, they said Nixon. They didn't say Reagan at all.
Did they say Nixon?
They're all born after, I mean, it's maybe for a couple. They were mostly born after Ronald Reagan was maybe not even dead, but at least no longer president.
Right. When Reagan died in the early 2000s?
I think so, yeah.
Right. That's so interesting. And then it makes me wonder why. I mean, for people kind of my generation, your generation, like the Nixon mask was a kind of a cultural touchstone but I wouldn't think that they would know about the Nixon mask.
Yeah. I think in elementary school, they're not really taught much about Reagan because there's no, except for, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. There's no,
right,
elementary school moment to be taught in history compared to Nixon, which is like China and
true.
Watergate and resignation and all that stuff. Reagan isn't really, you know, I mean, not that these girls are Rhodes scholars, but you know, they mostly just assumed it was Nixon.
Right. Oh, interesting. That's that would be very surprising to hear that. Well, I'm sure it was surprising to hear that, but amusing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Nixon, in historically, Nixon's now coming off quite reasonable compared to people like Reagan and Donald Trump and all the recent stuff. So,
This book, let's talk about the printing part of it. So the book you're it's published by Spurl Editions.
Yes.
And it was printed in Italy.
Yes, as was my LAX book. And so my LAX book was a black and white book. And we looked for a lot of printers, and a lot of them were super expensive. And for ideological reasons, I didn't want it printed in Turkey or China because of repression and also censorship issues. I knew that it would be a problem with this book. So I finally found this place through a really nice photography magazine in Italy. They recommended this printer, Grafisch Morandi, who did a wonderful job with LAX and were very communicative. I mean, their English isn't 100%, but what they don't know in English, they make up for with, you know, enthusiasm and the interest to be really good at getting this job done. So I worked really well with them on LAX, and I knew I was going to work with them on Nude Reagan because this was definitely a challenge in terms of the exposure, mostly, not the color. The color I left alone. I didn't change the color one bit from the scans. I didn't lighten them or bring any different kinds of color in. So the color is what you see is what you get. But the exposure was definitely going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. And describe for us a little bit of the process of working with them when you're far away and you want to make sure that the prints reflect the qualities that you want each image to have.
Yes, well, I scan the Polaroids, so I was able to use like Dropbox to get them the images, and then they send me essentially a blue line, like the entire book printed out and bound, so I can see the order of it is correct and nothing's screwed up in terms of that. And then they also sent me proofs, color proofs of like huge sheets of the photographs, ganged up in a galley kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they sent me variations of the darker ones, like where they lighten it a tiny bit using their judgment to make sure the inks didn't clot up and stuff. And I was able to pick through the proofs and say, oh, I like this, you know, option B better than option A or whatever. And they did a really good job.
Mm-hmm. And then, that was all you were making judgments and decisions based on you're seeing the physical print.
Yes.
Right. Not
yes.
Obviously.
What will eventually be printed in the book.
Right.
And, there was a little bit of a hiccup. I used the typeface called Blue Highway for the cover. The actual words Nude Reagan is in a typeface called Blue Highway. And there's another Blue Highway that they had in their computer that made it look like crap. So I had to make sure that they had my copy of Blue Highway.
Oh, interesting.
Because they came out all condensed and weird. And that's why you do the proofing. You want to make sure you do all the proofs before you get the thing done.
Right. Right. Well, that it looks great. And then after that, and I'm only mentioning this because I follow you on Facebook and on Instagram. And so I saw, for like maybe the last month or so, maybe slightly longer than that, you were posting pictures of the process that they were going through of, printing the book in Italy.
Yes.
Sharing that with the people who follow you.
I thought that would be nice for people to see, like, you know, how the process works. And Massimo, who's the printer, Massimo Morandi, the owner of the company, he agreed. I asked him if he could take like just iPhone photographs of the process. And I did that originally for LAX, and he was enthusiastic about it. And he did the same for Nude Reagan. And it's nice to see, since I can't be there, it was nice to see these guys working on it and their process. And In the end, I complimented the crew and they sent me a nice little photograph of them, like with a thank you sign. It was really cute.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's very exciting to watch people on the other side of the planet work on this thing that you're kind of so engaged with and connected to. And, you know, that must have been exciting to see these images kind of come to you from Massimo.
And I've worked with printers in the past when I did my Lusmord book. Like Lusmord, I couldn't print it anywhere in America because everyone thought it was disgusting, these murderers' writings. I couldn't get it printed in America. So there's also censorship issues that wasn't present for LAX, but was definitely present for this. There are not many printers, especially in America, that are willing to do these kind of books. And I know it seems weird now in the age of Tumblr and stuff, but it's a real concern. And I have definitely had that in mind, that I didn't want some guy who's just like, oh, this is perverted stuff, I can't print it. Because printers are weird that way. They really do like kind of stomp on you when they think something's wrong.
So kind of, you mean when they feel like there's an inappropriateness?
Yes, yes. When I did the Amok Dispatch, you know, we had some pretty crazy stuff in the Amok Dispatch. And we sold in the Dispatch Tom of Finland artwork, his books. And we had a Tom of Finland picture of a man having sex with another man. And we tried to get it printed in San Bernardino, and this guy was like, I can't have that kind of picture, you know, I can't have my workers working on this and stuff like that. So we eventually ended up using a Chinese printer in San Gabriel for the Dispatch.
Huh. Wow. Wow. That's a surprising response.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's just the Chinese, they just needed the cash up front and a pack of cigarettes and they're ready to go. And that was before San Gabriel was this hip, cool place that it is now. It was in the throes of like white people upset that there was Chinese language signs and stuff. So it was a pretty interesting atmosphere.
So what are you working on now?
Well, when I did the photo sessions with these models, I had two ideas in mind in terms of photography. I did the short film model test, where I videotaped them. And then I did the Polaroids of them as Newt Reagan. And then I did this project. I did these photographs that are eventually going to be booked next year called Still, where I photographed the models as if they were like displayed mannequins or displayed. Mannequins, I guess, is the best bet, where I have them on a platform and I photograph them almost like they're, their eyes are open, they're not dead, but they're kind of inanimate. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in the idea that of taking very non-sensual nude photographs where you kind of say, here's the body, here it is, but playing with notions of like Laura Mulvey's The Gaze and where the viewer can look at their bodies on display, but they don't look back.
Mm-hmm.
And where the positions are not sexual, but they're explicit in terms of the nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm playing with that right now. I'm editing that book right now.
Are they, you may have said this, but I'm not positive. Are they standing on the pedestal?
I made this creepy, like serial killerish kind of board with a lip on it so they could stand on the lip. And then I had the board positioned at a 45 degree angle on a workhorse, like a stand.
Yep.
So that they are just like on this board. And then I had two of the stands, and then I had them as a table on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially three positions, and it's like painted this, the board is stained this like dysentery green.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on a screenplay that I wrote called Still, where I just kind of was interested in this idea of this guy who, like, sort of like the collector, like this guy collected women. And I thought it was kind of an interesting idea of, like, a photographer just taking this board and photographing new models on it. I thought it'd be creepy and kind of interesting.
And how, this is probably for the discussion for that book, but I'm going to ask you now, since you're talking about it and engaged with it. So how did the models respond to that?
They responded well. I mean, the only problem is that you stand on a board for a long period of time. Some things happened that I really wasn't ready for, like all the blood kind of settles in your ankles and your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And they would get lightheaded sometimes from just being still, just being, you know, standing somewhere for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So after the first model, I made sure that, I mean, I had refreshments and stuff, but I made sure that after the first model that I had water and carbs and, you know, just made sure that they were, and we took many breaks because mm-hmm. it was strangely tiring. You know, even though they were just standing still, it was kind of tiring for the models.
Mm-hmm.
But in the model mayhem page where I advertised for these models, I made sure that they knew that it was explicit nudity, that there was no implied nudity, that, you know, all that stuff, just so I was upfront with them about that.
Mm-hmm. So that book's name is going to be Still, or is,
yes.
Still, right?
Yes.
And on your Instagram and on Facebook, I think on Facebook too, you're also posting these really incredible pictures that you took when you were going to CalArts of different kind of people in different settings and different maybe occupational settings. Or are you going to do anything with those?
No plans for those. Like the one series I think you're talking about, hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my mother's hospital. She's the nurse in one of the photographs, and I just took a 6x7 Pentax and photographed all these people that I knew through my mom at the hospital. And it was just something I enjoyed doing. I didn't even do it for a class assignment or anything. I just did it. But it's only like 24 photographs or something. It's not enough for a book. Mm-hmm. I may put it out later on the website or something else, but it's not for any publication.
I think those are, I've told you this before, but I think those are fantastic.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I would like to see them. And, you know, I have ephemera through my photographs from earlier. Like, I photographed a public image, you know, John Lydon's band at American Bandstand, and that got reprinted a couple of places and on websites that I was happy about.
Mm-hmm.
But no plans for hospital yet, but I'd like to be somewhere.
I love that the names that you, I love the name of hospital that you would call it just hospital, or you're calling it hospital. It's so nondescriptive, and
yes.
it's kind of perfect for like the view of being in the year 2016 and looking back at, you know, at 1980 something.
Yeah. 1983. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird for me too, because, you know, my mother's dead and most of her friends are dead. So it's kind of like this morbid thing for me now too, to see it. It was like my first job was working as a dishwasher at that hospital. So
oh, really?
I also worked with a lot of those people and had a lot of fun with them, and they were very sweet to me. So I felt like it would be nice to chronicle them. It is a weird thing about getting older. It's like, you go through these photographs you took when you were a kid, and it's like, some of them are stupid and some of them are class assignments. But then I did find that some stuff had worth, especially in the context of today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think hospital has that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like, for instance, I mean, hospital, there's like African-Americans. You never see African-Americans in photographs and work, you know, hardly ever. It's like just stuff like that. You just notice.
Mm-hmm. And there's not, I thought there's not another, okay, maybe you wouldn't even call it a series, but I thought there were some other images you were posting too that were from a slightly different situation.
I photographed like I have another series that this website's interested in, like called Punk Days, where it's all the photographs I took when I was like going to punk shows and had punk rock friends and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I did portraits of like friends at CalArts and stuff. And I did that other thing called Gray Card you may have seen.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, yes. that was just one night at an art opening at CalArts where that was an assignment where I was supposed to develop my first roles of color film, and I had to have somebody hold a gray card, and everyone else did the assignment where they got in a studio and had some guy or girl hold up a gray card in a studio setting. But I thought just take the gray card to a cocktail party and have everyone hold the gray card.
Mm-hmm. And what's so wonderful about those images is there's people's responses, like there's the way their faces look and, you know, kind of playing, serving this purpose or this role for you to help you out. So there's kind of that. And then I think you and I have had a separate discussion, you know, where you said, you know, all the stories of what happened to people and kind of who they are. And so, you know, as someone who doesn't have that contextual information, but you kind of shared some of that with me, you know, to then look at the pictures with that as you're looking at the pictures when you seeing the pictures through those, that kind of lens. That also is pretty fascinating too.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to me because I was brand new at CalArts when I took those photographs. So some of these people that I photographed became good friends. Some of them became girlfriends. And then later, you know, some of them died of AIDS or some of them became successful artists. And, you know, it's all over the map in that regard. But at the time, it was just a stupid class assignment. I do like the fashion and other things, like everyone's drinking, everyone's smoking mm-hmm. cigarettes, and, you know, mm-hmm. it's a different, those people are special to me because they do have that kind of like Velvet Underground, who gives a shit kind of attitude that I love.
Mm-hmm. And I also feel,
I don't see as much anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I do feel like the way I'm thinking of one woman in particular, as I say this, but I know that it applies to more people than this, but the idea of like femininity and what it meant to be, you know, a female in an art school context then seems extremely different than, say, when I went to art school in the 1990s or some of the people I know currently who are in art school. Like there's a much different kind of orientation to it, that they express themselves kind of outwardly, maybe in fashion or the way that they just, you know, create their appearance. It's a very different thing.
How do you think that they change their, I mean, how do you think that they present themselves?
Well, I think, you mean currently or?
No, the women in the photographs.
There's a subtlety to it. That's not particularly, it's not like overtly sexual or, you know, over the top, like here I am, this is the costume that I wear that kind of tells the world that I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. It feels a lot more kind of subtle and more, there's a more of a security, that I'm sensing that they're projecting in kind of who they are and what they're doing, you know, in the context of art school. I could be reading a lot more into the photo than.
No. But I mean, I think I love the women back then because, and I'm still friends with them now. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, when I would meet them at a cocktail party, they just come up to me and go, "What's your story, King?" You know, like that kind of thing. Uh-huh. Like they were the brassy dame and they did not have issues with sexuality. They would have sex with whoever they wanted, and they were very open about it. And they were not confused. They were not like messes. They were messes in some regard, like every art school kid. But you know, they did have a bravado and an intellectualism that I think is sorely lacking for the most part now.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of describing it for sure. Well, tell us, where can people find Nude Reagan? And also, since we talked about LAX, where can people find LAX to purchase for themselves?
We are not getting in any bookstores. So we sell exclusively through Amazon and SpurlEditions.com for both of those books.
Okay, great. And are you, I know you were looking for places to exhibit your photos. Do you have anything upcoming for that?
Nothing at all.
Wow. Someone needs to talk to you because, you know, that I think they're both groups of images are really lend themselves well to being seen in that kind of context. So
thank you. I mean, one of the things about living in Palm Springs is that, you know, I live in an area where the art world is, for lack of a better word, infected by the tourism industry. So everything that is supposed to be art out here is based on mid-century modernism and swimming pools and cocktails and, you know, looking fabulous. And I am the opposite of all of that. So I am kind of an outsider in this town in terms of the art world. And I did not keep any connections with, I mean, I don't think the people in New York and LA galleries would want this sort of thing anyway, to be honest, because it isn't, it's kind of strange and weird as opposed to, Baroque and obscure.
So I think what I'm understanding is that if any of the people who are listening to this are in Palm Springs and they see someone who doesn't look fabulous, that possibly could be you.
Oh, definitely me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm the Orson Welles looking guy with the sandals and muttering to himself, as opposed to the guy in the loud print jacket with a poodle.
Okay. All right. So I'll look for you when next time I'm in Palm Springs.
Wonderful.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
And you've created two really, really beautiful books. And Nude Reagan will be available starting on June 1st.
Yes.
At Amazon and SpoilEditions.com.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.